Indeed it is, and Lynn Andrews, our special guest tonight, as we talk about shamanism, power, cycles, and healing on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Lynn Andrews, author of the Medicine Woman series. Now, that chronicles her three decades of study and work with shaman healers on four continents. And now, she's recognized worldwide as a leader in the fields of spiritual healing, personal empowerment, a shaman healer mystic herself. Andrews is widely acknowledged as a major link between the ancient world of shamanism and the modern societies. And here she is on Coast to Coast. Lynn, how are you?
I'm wonderful, George. Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. Tell me, because so many people have different views on what a shaman is, what they do. Give me your take on that, shamanism.
Well, in anthropological terms, a shaman is different in every tribe, every native tribe around the world. For me, I'm an urban shaman. I'm a shaman of the present day, but I have studied with native women around the world. So shamanism, to me, is learning how to choreograph the energies in the universe. In other words, healing the heart and the mind is what I set out to do as a healer, as someone who could see things that sometimes other people didn't see. For instance, I could see, as a child, I could see lights around people.
Auras, yeah.
You know, so I didn't know why I could see that. In fact, I didn't realize that other people didn't see that. And when I mentioned it to my best friend, who I would ride to school with, she was a Native American girl, and I mentioned to her that I could see red around her and in her, and I knew that she'd been really abused by her father that day. And I mentioned it somehow. I said, gee, you know, I hope you feel better. And she said, why? And I said, well, I could see this red around you and your anger. And she was horrified that I could see that she felt invaded in some way.
Sure, sure. Edgar Cayce.
I tell you, it changed my life for a long time. I suddenly realized that I was separate and different, and I didn't want to feel like that. But I think most shamans in the world have had some sort of experience, like the wounded healer. In other words, they've had something in their early life that made them special, set apart in some way from the rest of the tribe, the rest of the people. My learning personally has not been traditional native culture. I have worked with these native women who have memorized and written an incredible ancient wisdom that was held by the Cathars, was held for 1,000 years, and finally has come down to us. And being the only Caucasian person, the only one who is not native in this 44 women circle, I was expected to go out into the world and talk about them for the first time. And shamanism, I think for me, I'm a healer, but shamanism is actually the term that is given to someone who can heal the mind and the heart or the body. Some healers heal the body. They learn incredible ways of bringing in energy from the universe, up from Mother Earth. They're very much a part of nature. I am very much a part of nature.
How did they learn this, Lynn? Because, you know, we have generally lost that knowledge here. How did they know it?
Yeah, I think we have. I think what's happening, I don't know if you agree with me on this, but I see a technocracy of the world, certainly in the West anyway, and you see people are so obsessed with these different things, you know, iPods and cell phones and computers and all these wonderful things that are, you know, extending our arms into cybernetic meadows. It's wonderful.
Hold on, Lynn, while I text my producer for a moment. See, I'm kidding. But you're right. That's what happens in this world nowadays.
Well, yeah, but what happens is you lose heart in the process, I think. I think we've lost a sense of beauty somehow, aesthetics. I think we're separated a great deal. We don't talk to each other. We text each other.
That's right. No, you're right. We've lost that. As a matter of fact, most people prefer not to talk on a cell phone now.
They
prefer just to text people. And I remember the old days, Len, where, you know, we didn't have cell phones. I mean, yeah, I'll admit I was one of the first to have the old phone wired, hardwired into my car.
I did, too. And I loved it.
And then I had that big old Motorola that looked like I was on a military mission, you know, with holding the bag and stuff. But, you know, I was thinking just a few weeks ago how I got by without all those things. And then when the little pagers came out, do you remember that? When no message other than just a page and a phone number.
Oh,
and
gosh, I've forgotten about that.
Yeah, you'd look at it and you'd go, oh, somebody's calling me. And you'd remember these phone numbers. I was thinking, what did we do before those things? Life was a little more peaceful, wasn't it?
Well, it was. I mean, how did children grow up without seatbelts and all of these things?
And, you know, the lack of video games. They didn't have that. I didn't have that when I was a kid. You know, we'd go out and play sports in the street in Detroit. You know, that's what we did. We played baseball in the street. We played football. We played hockey. I mean, that's what we did. We went outside. We did things with our friends. We came back. We had lunch. We went back out again. We went to school. Nowadays, kids come in. They plop down. They watch television. Or they're playing video games.
Not only that, it's dangerous to be on the street.
Oh, nowadays, sure.
You know, you'd never hear a parent say, you know, come home by dark.
I used to remember when a car would come down the street. Now, this was a suburban street. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'd get off the road and we'd yell, car! That was what we called. We said to each other, we'd all pull over, the car would go through, we'd come back and play. And, you know, but it was never that busy. You know, you get maybe one car every 25 minutes that went by.
Well, you know, the interesting thing to me is about playing and you know, being involved with your neighbors and knowing who the people are that live next to you is that you're, in a way, you're using your imagination. You're exploring the wilderness of your own soul, so to speak, through the interaction with people. And certainly shamans do that. And, you know, shamanism is an ancient term. And without getting into a long dialogue about anthropology, about how shamans are discovered and this and that, I think shamanism and the storytelling aspect of shamanism, which is what I brought into my new book called Coming Full Circle, and it's about ancient teachings for a modern world. But what the ancient teachings were given to people through the process of story. So the Native American twisted hairs or the bards and the storytellers of ancient times would go from village to village and talk about the history and talk about what was happening in other places and the magic and the healing and so forth with the kids and with the people. And when the Gutenberg press was developed, all of a sudden, the elders of the world, really, lost their power and their place in society. You know, elders were the teachers.
That's
elders
right.
Were the ones that everybody came to.
They all looked up to him.
That's right. And now, in a sense, you could say that elders are the forgotten ones, just like kids at risk.
I was with a scientist a few weeks ago from the City of Hope, and she was on the show last week. And we were talking, and I'm a believer like you are that, you know, this planet, this Mother Earth has incredible powers and healing powers. And so, you know, she's a molecular professor. She has spotted things about cancer. And I said to her, Linda, this planet has the ability to cure every disease. We just need to find out where it is.
That's right.
Whether it's a plant or a piece of bark from a tree, whatever it is, You need to be able to just adjust that and try it and do that. But I have a twofold question for you, Lynn. Question number one is, how did the ancient shamans know this? And two, who in the heck made the planet do that?
Who made the planet?
Create what we need. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, this thing just doesn't happen by accident.
Well,
I mean, if you got a headache, there's a willow bark, which they made aspirin out of,
and
it
right.
cures your headache.
And aspen trees.
Who would come up with this?
Yes, well, who came up with human beings and all of life? I think, to me, I don't ask anybody to believe anything, but my experience has always been that this earth is a schoolhouse, mm-hmm. in a sense, and that we were sent here, we chose to come here, with frailties as human beings, and we came here to strengthen ourselves, to learn about things. And we choose maybe a family who is abusive, say. And that abusive family takes away your dreams, makes you a child that is afraid to be themselves, stick their head above the crowd,
sure.
because, you know, they think they're going to be hit. And I certainly was one of those kids. And
well, sorry to hear that.
Yeah, you know. Me too.
You pulled yourself out of it, didn't you?
Well, it taught me to be a shaman. It taught me very, very early on that when I would come into a room, I knew exactly who was in that room. I knew if I was going to be hurt or not, if I was safe. It taught me to be aware, but aware in the sense of really aware. I mean, I could sense the energy anywhere because I was afraid of I mean, I was trying to survive. And
and that's the mechanism that made you survive. You had
that's
that
right.
ability.
I mean, but there's a downside to that, and that is that you are afraid to put your head above the crowd. You are afraid of success. You never had a childhood, so when you get older, you want to make it a childhood.
Yeah.
Therefore, you sabotage your success. And I found all over the world, working with Native people, but certain women, great women of high degree, that are part of my circle, and I would go to each of them, and I would learn various things from them to heal my frailties. I was sent by my mentors to work with them in Australia and Tibet and Nepal and so forth. So my books are really about what experience I had with, say, Ginny V in Australia, and what, you know, how did she heal certain aspects of my frailties. And I mean, for instance, we were walking across the outback one afternoon, and I was terribly upset about the condition of human life and how does one person go out into this world and ever make a mark, ever mm-hmm. help anything and change anything, and blah blah blah. And Ginny V was kind of scuffling along with me, and she stopped, and she reached into her dilly bag, and she lifted a crystal up to the sun. And the sun shone through the crystal and threw beautiful prismatic colors on the red earth. And she said, human beings are like crystals. She said, what makes the beauty of the light shining through this crystal are the flaws, not its perfection.
Ha. Huh. That's a good point.
And I, you know, it's just, you know, the truth is in between the words there, but it was fascinating to me because I realized that we don't celebrate the flaws that we have. We tend to hide them. We want people to love us and to like us. Almost everyone does. And as a result, people will hide. And as a result, they're not who they really are. So they never feel loved because people don't know them. In other words, they say to themselves, well, if they really knew who I was, they would hate me. And so they hide. And it's, I see it all over the world. I think 90% of the people in this world have been abused. I really do.
In some form or fashion, maybe.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean sexual abuse or being hit. It might be just not being noticed.
Or mental cruelty. That's an abuse.
Yes, emotional cruelty. People using their voice to hurt you. And I see it, well, I mean, I'm just everywhere I've gone in the world, there are so many people that need this kind of shamanic work that I do, which is healing the mind and the heart, but working with the energy, using a different word, really the frequency.
Well, have you ever seen a time, Lynn, where so many people are so bitter about so many things? I mean, most people just aren't happy right now.
No. No. They walk along and they stare at the ground and you never... it's extraordinary to me.
Walk into an elevator in New York, Lynn. Walk into an elevator in New York, jovial and happy, and go up to someone sitting there and just say, hey, how's your day? They'll run out of there. You know, they're not going to take that ride up the building with you. People just, there's something strange going on. Now, I don't know if this has been going on for a long time or if it's just relatively new over the past couple of years, but in your opinion, because you know a lot about human psyche, what's wrong with them?
It's, well, partly, I think it's the energy. I know that's a horribly misused word, but it's the energy, the frequency, the drive that is coming through 2012. And why have all the calendars ended? Why all of this fuss about suddenly we're going to be experiencing Armageddon in one way or another? First of all, I think that's so human. Every time we end a millennium, any time we end 10 years, we're about to be destroyed one way or another. It's fascinating to me that humans do this. Over and over.
And every civilization has thought they were in the end.
That's right.
Everyone.
I know. And if they would read history, they would see that it's a turning of time. It's a turning of consciousness. I do think, however, that we have been given a new chip, so to speak, in our computer brain. And I think for once, finally, and at last, we have the new ability to be able to understand what that chip means, if we have the ability to see it. But I think we have, right now, I think that kind of turned on. We suddenly have this new chip. We don't know what it is. People are running around so fast. Money is being lessened in value. People are afraid. They don't know what in God's name is going to happen with the political scene or wars or anything else. It's as if they're out of control. When people feel like they're losing the money that they earned all of their lives, they're losing that value, they're afraid for their families, they're afraid for their lives in a way.
Sure.
You know? And sure, they're staring at the ground. They're miserable.
Oh, they don't know if they're going to get laid off tomorrow.
No.
I mean, it's tough. Lynn, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. And also, of course, you know, as I was saying, every previous civilization thought that they were in end times. Only one civilization will be right when it comes to that. And that'll be the last civilization. We'll be back. And our guest tonight, Lynn Andrews, we're talking about shamanism, healing. We're going to take phone calls with her next hour. Toward the end of this hour, we're going to do it a little differently. I'm going to ask you a specific thing to do when you make that phone call. So stand by for that. And we'll be back with her more as we talk about how she heals on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Lynn Andrews with us. Lynn, when you heal people, is it emotional healing? Are you taking care of those kind of scars, or is it a physical healing?
Well, you know, George, it's so hard to explain what I do because I do something different with absolutely everyone. I have worked with people all my life as a shaman healer before I realized I was a shaman. But I was giving a lecture not terribly long ago, and it was a fairly large crowd in a church, And I was just speaking. I was kind of in my mind trying to make a beautiful space for these people to hear some stories that I wanted to tell that were healing stories. And all of a sudden, a woman in the back jumped up from her wheelchair. She hadn't walked in 20 years. And she started walking down the aisle towards me. She was screaming, "You've healed me, you've healed me." And I was...
That's remarkable.
I was thrilled for her and horrified at the same time. And anyway, I was talking with her and the rest of the people for the next 2 hours about how you don't heal anyone. What you do is you hold up a mirror for people to see why they have asked for, decided to have, allowed, chosen a disease to be in their life. And then when they see that oftentimes they choose a disease or an affliction, like they choose a friend, they don't want to let go of it, they're addicted to it, and it's very hard for them to let go of it. When they change their frequency, their energy field that is created by the way that they think, if you can lift them up into a higher, I don't know how to explain this any better, it's part of what we call the unknowable.
Sure.
But to try and explain what I'm talking about is that you bring them into a different frequency through meditation, through visualizations, through making beautiful things that they never realized they could ever make in their lives. They begin to see more to life than what they came in with, from what they normally see. And as a result of that, for instance, this woman in the wheelchair, somehow my words reached her in a way that she needed. She was open at that very moment. You know how you can hear things 100 times and it never does anything, and all of a sudden you hear it and it changes your life?
Yeah.
And honestly, George, it was just amazing. And it's happened to me many times in my work with people. I remember working on a woman, and I was doing hands-on healing in the very beginning. I don't do that anymore because, and I'll tell you why. I would put my hands on, I did for this one friend of mine who was going in for knee surgery, and I put my hands on her knee, and I told or went through a visualization with her about her forward mobility into the world. In other words, it was right knee, the right side of her body, which is male, which is manifestation, moving into the world with a point of view that is successful. And she was very afraid of that because she was afraid that her family would no longer love her. So as a result of that, she never... First of all, had never been successful. She sabotaged her success every single time. Even though she was brilliant and had a doctorate, she wouldn't go out into the world and practice. And once she saw that, it healed. But then what happened? This is very interesting. And the reason I don't do any kind of hands-on healing anymore, I work with the mind and the heart instead, is because she was furious with me about a month later. Because I had somehow, I had in this process of healing taken away the experience from her. She needed to experience the fact that she had created this. And somehow in the healing of it, I'd taken that away from her.
Hmm.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
And so I thought, you know what, that was a great lesson for me as well. Because I realized that people come into this earth walk, this world, to experience a lot of frailties, a lot of problems, particularly being born at this particular time in history. I believe that we chose it. I believe that we came here to be men and women at this time, whichever society we're in, and we've chosen what we need to heal. And that's the signpost. Those are the markers on the trail leading towards your heightened awareness, perhaps your enlightenment in this lifetime.
Lynn, do you do some of the work like Edgar Cayce did? I mean, will you look at someone, and in your particular state, you don't go into a trance state, but can you tell them what's wrong with them?
I can, it sometimes. It's sort of like Edgar Cayce, I guess. He was a great prophet. I am really not a prophet, but I am a seer. I kind of have this vision of the world. I if you can imagine, you were talking about a minute ago or a little bit ago, you know, how can, why is all of this stuff existing, like aspirin and things in tree bars, all of that? The world is held up, in my way of thinking, by a great dreamer, a dreamer god. And this dreamer god has dreamed this incredible existence that we live within, this magic, this beauty that we live in. It's a paradise. Our bodies are the most magical things, I think, in the world. Life is extraordinary. And the great dreamer has been slumbering for a very long time. And when you're outside of space and time in the relative world, time really doesn't exist. So he's about to wake up. Now, what happens if we're a great dream here on Earth and the great dreamer who's dreaming us is waking up? What's going to happen? You're going to have to take responsibility for your own definitive life, what you create.
Right.
And if you're not really secure in who you are, when this dreamer awakes, you're not going to be in the greatest of shape.
Even people who are apparently successful, I think, have trouble with who they may be. I mean, I've heard cases of guys, for example, who are wealthier than God, and they're insecure. How does this happen?
I wrote a book a while back called Love and Power. And it's about how to stay with the love in your life as you move along in the power in your life. If you look at power as an up-the-ladder club, there's only a few at the top and everybody else is at the bottom. And it's very patriarchal. It's a patriarchal system. If you look at power as a circle, a never-ending circle, where everyone is equidistant from the center, which is the power place, then you never have that. You can maintain love and fruit for the soul along with your power. I mean, power is a very interesting word, you know, because I think people think, well, power means power over something. To me, it's having the ability and the strength and the integrity to realize your own dream.
Well, that's
and
a good point.
And that's what I talk about in Coming Full Circle, my new book. It's about how to take these ancient teachings, these fabulous ways of telling stories, like Amy Hummingbird's wing, when she, in the jungles of the Yucatan, took me to see where she was staying for the moment. She's a wanderer. She wanders from village to village. She's an extraordinary woman, very, very elder. And she took me to see the Melipona bees. Do you know what they are?
No, I do not. What are they?
Well, Melipona bees are the stingless bees. And they were...
I like that.
Yeah, I like that too. Very much. Thank you. First of all, she showed me the hives of the African bees. And they were very aggressive, and they didn't sting us because she was chanting and keeping them away from me and her. But that was kind of incredible. And then we went into the jungle, and she went to this little hut that she was staying in and living in momentarily. And she began to talk about the Melipona bees, and they were the currency for the Mayan tribe.
Huh.
The Mayans would trade honey from the Melipona bees because it was so incredibly healing and powerful. But the Melipona bees, when the Mayans left a lot of the earth, the Melipona bees, they thought had gone extinct. But Amy Hummingbird's wing had kept them alive. And she kept them alive in these old logs. And I was reminded of a legend that Agnes Whistling Elk told me many years ago, that the time, this particular time, 2012, was the time when the great trees are falling. And it was one of those beautiful statements, because I was thinking of Brazil. I was thinking of even Scotland, all across the world, how we have destroyed so many of the trees, which is one of the great sources of oxygen and our way of life. And so these the trees that had fallen, these old trees that were rotting, they piled in a kind of pyramidal shape, and inside the Melipona bees had kept their hives. And she took me over to this pile of logs, and she had me look in, and the bees were on the way that they have their honeycombs as they hang from them. It looked like little yellow teeth, like the teeth of a jaguar.
Yeah.
And she reached in and she took some, and she gave me some honey that tasted very different. It's sweet, but it has a citrus kind of aftertaste. And she showed me how healing this honey was. And the Melipona bees don't go out during the day like the African bees that go all the time. They wait until about noon. And like most of the writers I know, they get up around noon. And and they go out and they find just the right flower. They don't take nectar from all the flowers. And they are stingless. They're tiny little things with great big eyes, sort of like a chihuahua. You know how the eyes are so big.
Bigger than the body, yeah.
Yeah. And they're incredible. I was just fascinated. And I had no idea. It was those were the trade bees. In other words, if you had a lot of Melipona bees and they brought a lot of honey, you were very, very wealthy.
In those days.
In those days.
In those days. Tell me what your views are, Lynn, of the cosmos and this connection. I think there's something out there. I know there's something there, but I'd love to know exactly what it is.
In three words or less, how much time do we have?
Well, we got a few minutes here before the top of the hour.
I feel that we are moving through this great cosmos, this many, many, many universes, in a process of learning, and that it has taken an incredible, a huge amount of time. A Buddhist friend of mine in the Himalayas explained it in a way that maybe you've heard. He said, if you take this piece of cloth and you drag it across Mount Everest, as many times as you drag it across Mount Everest is how many times it takes to level that mountain, is how many times you have been alive and been working towards the process of enlightenment. So what he's saying is that it takes an awful long time, and we've been going through a different process here and there and the other within the universe for a very, very long time. I feel that we have a spirit shield, and the spirit shield is like your soul, and it spins throughout time. And before you're born onto the earth, this is how I remember what happened to me. Certainly don't ask anybody to believe this, but it's what I experienced. I was sitting at a kind of table with great masters and great women, figures of light, beings that had moved into great consciousness in the world. And they were full of humor, and they were kind, and they were looking at my spirit shield. And what is imprinted on the spirit shield from each lifetime is only one thing, and that's your experience. So we were looking at it from the south, the north, the east, and the west, and it was very plain on my spirit shield that I was a little weak in the emotional department, and that I needed to go to Earth, and I needed to study that, and that I would find great teachers, I would have great abilities, but that my emotions would get in my way a lot of the time. And that's what happened to me in my early books. I definitely needed to be taught with a lot of drama, and they took me through incredible experiences that, you know, I think it was hard for some people to believe that those kinds of things actually happened, and which doesn't matter to me because they did, and it was extraordinary, and it taught me many, many things, which I could tell you one of them if you would like to hear a story. But that's what I think happens with the spirit shield, is that you see where there's an imbalance, and I think you are... You choose a family. I think there are agreements in that family that none of us remember. A lot of what's going on now certainly is about abuse, I think.
Sure.
And I think to understand the world, you've got to understand that most people ruling countries everywhere have been through abuse. So what are they doing? They're setting up abusive situations.
Well, I got to tell you, Lynn, it's pretty enlightening. And this is what I'd like to do next hour. We'll take phone calls with people who have just general questions for you. But I want people to tell us why they think they need to be healed one way or another. I'd like to get people's views on that.
So that's interesting.
Have you found right now that more people need this than ever?
I've never seen anything like it. But I also think they need it more than they ever have, as far as I can see. But on the other side, people are in a stasis about money. They're so tight about it. Tight meaning they're holding. They're in a holding pattern because they don't know what's going to happen, and they don't want to spend their money. They don't want to go to an event. They don't want to. Oh my God! You know, maybe I won't be able to support my family. So. Maybe I can read a book, but I don't know if I can spend the money to go maybe to a school. I have a 4-year school without walls that I have written the whole curriculum for, and I did this as a gift to people who live in places where they can't come to me. They can't come work with me. And so I invented this school through the teachings with these great women of power from around the world, so that they could begin to clear away the veils of ignorance that are destroying their lives.
Well, that's a good point. Lynn, stay with us. We're coming back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We will take your phone calls, questions, but also if you think you need some kind of this shamanic healing, I want you to tell us why. I really want to get into you. With this 1 hour to go on Coast to Coast AM.